Hi, this is Dr. Stephanie Wigner, your podcast host. I'm a speaker, a chiropractor, a business coach, and a multiple seven-figure entrepreneur. I'm committed to helping wellness practitioners just like you build the business and the life of their dreams. Together, we'll dive into increasing profit, hiring the right team, and buying back your time so that your life can begin to prosper. Learn how I'm increasing my wealth and building a legacy without sacrificing those that I'm building it for. This is the Wealthy Practitioner Podcast. Hello, you beautiful people. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Wealthy Practitioner Podcast. Today, I have a super duper surprise guest for you. Denise Duffield Thomas is joining us from Australia, and she is an amazing business coach, mindset mentor, author, and I just am so excited to have her on in this conversation because you guys know that I love to talk about money, and what better person to have on to join us. So thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Stephanie. And I have to say, I love the name of your podcast. I think anything with wealthy in it is just like lights me up straight away.
Yes, we have that in common for sure. Thank you. Can you let the listeners know maybe just a little background on you and how you got started in entrepreneurship all before you started becoming this amazing online brand that has books and courses and things like that? How did you get started into entrepreneurship?
Honestly, I was kind of born this way. And I was just always that kid who was sparked off by ideas. And I started my first business when I was 9, selling bracelets. But I was also that kid that was just like, hey guys, let's start a babysitter's club. Let's, you know, do a garage sale. Let's collect poop and sell it. And horse poop. No, I should clarify, horse poop. However, I would say, I think this is my ADHD as well. Some of those ideas never really panned out. So I was kind of the kid that was like, everyone bring all your crap to my mom's house and we'll have a garage sale, that never truly eventuated. So I think that was just naturally who I was as a kid, but I didn't have a lot of entrepreneurial role models. And so it's really hard to imagine something for yourself when you've never seen it. So I think when I was a kid, I was really drawn to movies about working women because I didn't really know even that. Like, I was raised by a single mom. She had a lot of different jobs. Like, she would waitress for a while and then she would do something else. And so every time I saw a movie like Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, where she goes and works in an office, or 9 to 5, where she goes and works in an office, or She Devil, where she starts a company, I just thought, okay, obviously I'm going to do something on a typewriter in an office wearing a suit. And it didn't really occur to me until quite later on that I could do my own thing, because what I do now didn't exist, obviously.
Totally.
Yeah. So I think it was just a natural progression into, you know, well, what's happening now? So one of my first kind of entrepreneurial efforts in my 20s was I wrote an ebook. Because people were talking about the internet's coming and you can create these digital products. And so I was kind of, you know, taught find a problem and then create a solution for it. And so I was doing internet dating at the time in my 20s. And I was just like, everyone really sucks at this. So I wrote a book called Internet Dating Tips for Men. And it was an ebook that had, I couldn't even sell it myself because you couldn't PDF, you couldn't just email out a PDF. So I had to find someone to be like a broker, be an agent for this ebook, because I just, there was no mechanism to sell it myself. So I think it was just like a natural progression of like, oh, what's new? Oh, I'll try that. And I think then when I decided to go into the world of coaching, very quickly, it was a process of elimination for me of going, oh, I really love to talk to entrepreneurs rather than people in corporate jobs. I really love to talk to women. And then I just saw this common thread that was coming up, no matter what the industry, is women who were afraid to talk about money and to have very basic conversations with their clients about, here's the fee, you know, or late payments, or even asking for the sale. And so I decided to specialize in that area of just helping women have better conversations and not be scared of money in all industries, because every industry comes to me and goes, no, but we are special.
We're different.
Yes, we're not allowed to charge. We really care about our clients. And it's like, yeah, we all care about our clients. We all want the world to be a better place. And that also means we're allowed to make money and to be expansive and abundant, not only in our own lives, but the role modeling that we do with clients as well, right? Is that I matter, I serve, I deserve, and to have these, have win-win pricing, you know?
Yes, I love that so much. There's a lot I want to unpack here. So I love that you even just said, you know, I tried this and then I realized I liked entrepreneurship better than corporate. I think for some clients that especially want to expand online, because I work with brick and mortars and online businesses, but when they're in those earlier stages of building online, there's a lot of hesitancy around, well, I have to have it perfect. I have to figure it out. And you're like, well, you just get started and you kind of figure out what you like and you don't like. And so I just think that is a true entrepreneurial trait to be like, let's just rip the Band-Aid off and jump in, because that's the first step to figuring out what your thing is going to be. And then through all of that, you know, trial and error, it led you to like, okay, I can be this money mentor essentially that talks about money, has these difficult conversations. And I know even for myself, I wish I knew where it came from, but it was like, even when I opened my first business, it was like, I can't believe I'm charging this. I can't believe that I'm going to expect people to pay this. And it was like, how do we think the world is supposed to work if people aren't paying for the things that they're using? And so what are some of the most commonalities that you find amongst people who are maybe starting a business and they have to have those conversations? Do you feel like it ties back to maybe beliefs that were passed on to them, or is it an internal self-worth issue? Like, what is it?
So all the things. So one of the first things I get people to do when they come into my money bootcamp is that we do a bit of an inventory of money memories. And this is kind of an ongoing process because some things you realize the significance of it later on. But we kind of look for the really obvious things and to find some themes. And sometimes it's a chicken or egg thing, right? Sometimes we go, why can't I charge? And you have to go back and try and figure it out. Other times there's some really obvious examples from your childhood that are really impacting you today. So one example that comes up again and again is if you've been told that it's impolite, if it's rude, if it's, you know, really gross to talk about money, of course you're going to struggle setting your prices, talking about your prices, increasing your prices, chasing up invoices, putting on late fees or cancellation fees. All of those things are going to feel so painful to you. And this is one of the big problems that I see, right? Is that we should just be able to have easy conversations about money. This is the price. Oh, hey, you know, can you fix up that invoice? But if you have been taught that it's just so disgustingly impolite, it's it's always going to be tricky. And I've actually seen people quit their businesses because they literally just cannot ask for the money. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you don't have to. But there are also other nuances as well. And I would say one of the first ones that I always get people to try and unpack is, what is your relationship between hard work and money? And I think it's just so drummed into us, right? You have to work hard to make money. And for those of us who now are in this online space, it's almost like at some point in our life, that formula, that equation of I sell this and I get paid this, it got broken because we can sell ebooks, we can do group programs, we can make money when we're not physically present. I don't know about you, but when I first, it took me a long time to get my head around that.
Yeah.
Like it just was like
it's I would say in the last 2 years, I had to break that association in my brain of like, hey, the harder I work, the more I make. And I literally challenged myself. Even last November, I said, I'm going to go away for a month and I'm going to prove to myself I can still make a lot of money while I do it. And I ended up having a second best month, I think, because it was like, I wanted to prove, because sometimes our nervous systems need the proof in the pudding. You know, they need the evidence that it's possible. And so I'm a big proponent of that. Just challenge yourself and see if you can prove that association no longer serves you. It no longer belongs. And that's something in the last few years that I feel like I've really just been brushed up against.
Well, you're not alone in that, because I think it's just, it feels like you're breaking the laws of gravity somehow. Mm-hmm. Or it feels like you're cheating, or you don't really care about your clients, or something bad. And I find that this is really interesting to dig into, because it actually doesn't really correspond to how much money you had growing up, because poor families have this, you have to work really hard, you have to work four jobs to make money. But also like wealthy families do as well, especially if your parents were doctors, lawyers, entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And then we're in this society, right, where it's like we've just been taught, like the early bird gets the worm. You live right next to one of the most ambitious cities in the world, mm-hmm. right? And I also find it's really interesting to dig into like different regional and country-specific things around this too, because I'm in a very working-class town and it's an old coal and steel and that kind of town. And so then it's almost like, well, we're honest about our work kind of thing, right? Yeah. And that permeates as well. So it's really interesting the kind of nuances around that, about what your family around culture has said about what constitutes an honest day's work.
That's right? So good to point that out. My husband and I say that we do actually feel that some of our earlier success in entrepreneurship was from living on the coast. And it's just like hustle. People are moving and grooving. Like, you better get with it or you're going to get left behind. And so that energy also kind of translates onto us, right? And it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I do find even the clients that I work with, obviously, and higher costs of living, they're like, have a little bit more hustle to them because it costs just a little bit more to do the things that they want to do.
Absolutely. And I think then it drives different behavior in us. So you might feel guilty about outsourcing and hiring in your business because you feel like it only counts if I do everything myself. You might feel guilty about doing online consults with clients instead of in-person ones because you feel like you didn't really earn it. And the example I always use is when I wrote my first personal development book, and people were buying it, and I felt I didn't do the transaction properly. I felt like, no, but I already wrote that. So I need to call them and read it to them over the phone to make that complete transaction. Does that make sense? Because I just thought, how am I getting paid for this still? It doesn't feel right. I think that's a big thing that we have to break, especially, and this leads on to the second big money block I see a lot in women, is I can help people or make money, but both is wrong and dirty and exploitative or whatever it is. And I see this especially in helping professions, you know, health, wellness, anything to do with grief, all of these different things. But honestly, I hear this from every profession, really too. And it's this feeling of, if I really cared about this, it should be free, or I want everybody to know this. And I think this is particularly a gendered thing as well, because a lot of the female entrepreneurs that I know are using very innate skills that if we were born 100 years ago, that we were just being expected to do, right? Helping, sharing information, nurturing, exactly, you know, helping to make our communities better. And this is particularly true in health fields. Like 200 years ago, we'd be getting some eggs.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. It's like someone would bring us a chicken and say, can you help my child? And so I think then what happens is we feel really guilty about helping people for money. And then it gets reflected back to us. And I don't know if you've received emails like this, but I have, saying, if you really cared, this should be free. Why are you charging for this? Mm-hmm. And that really hurts, because we do care. And putting a monetary figure on our helping doesn't mean that we don't care. It really doesn't. It's just that we live in a world where that we, you know, that is a fair energy exchange.
Totally.
And we want to be able to do this.
That's what I love to remind people of too, is like, it is an energy exchange, asking people to pay you for something, and also you leading in paying for things yourself. I love to invest in things. I love to invest in myself, into my home, into my family, into my community, into nonprofits. Like, I love to spend monies on those type of things. And it's just a reminder, like, the more money that we have, the more good we can do. And that's what I really like to point out too, when people are having that internal friction or like that process of, oh my gosh, who am I to want to be wealthy? Who am I to want to make more money than I need, you know? But imagine how much good you can do if you had more. You're never going to be broke enough to help broke people. Like, you have to have money in order to do that.
Oh, absolutely. And I have met practitioners who are crazy busy. You know, I met someone who could see 100 patients a week face to face. Oh, actually, no, it was online. But I just thought, how do you have time to do anything? When I was even to see coaching clients one-to-one, I max out at like 15 a week. I could not energetically hold any more. And so what I say to people who almost martyr themselves a little bit by undercharging, over-delivering, it's your contribution and impact is capped with your energy. Mm-hmm. It is. And I mean, I've seen so much burnout. You must just see it all the time in your industry with your clients and your community. We do get burnt out if we're not charging the win-win prices, but really having that balanced energy exchange. And when you do that and you are comfortable with the amount of clients that you have and you're charging well, you can buy back some time to write books, start a podcast, create group programs for your clients, do all of those things. It creates free resources. None of that happens just by accident. As you know, having a podcast is an enormous undertaking that we sometimes then discount as just being like, oh, I've got my podcast. It's like, no, you will have the energy to do those things and to help way more people. But it means that you have to respect that energy exchange.
Oh, so good. I know that your book that you wrote, Chillpreneur, is something, probably one of the first resources, things that I came across that was like, could it be easier than what I'm making it right now? Like this whole entrepreneurship journey. And I remember, I think I came across it back in 2022 because I ended up reading it and then I hosted a retreat and I gifted it to everybody who attended the retreat. And I know that there was a lot of things clicking in their head too. And so what was your journey that made you go, I think this could be easier and now I'm going to write a book on it, or like I need to tell others about it? Because back then, especially, I feel like that wasn't a message that was out there a ton.
Well, I know the exact moment that I wanted to write this book. So I had had my third baby and I was breastfeeding and I really wanted to get back into the business mindset, which I never really stopped, even my pregnancies. But it was a book, Tools of Titans by Tim Ferriss. I love Tim Ferriss's work. And it really did inform my early years of my entrepreneurship journey. But it was a case study about one of the men in the book who like did a daily podcast and he woke up really early and did his podcast and then like did all his stuff all day. And then he was right at the end and he was like, and I go home and I give the baby a bath with my wife and then I sleep on the couch and I do it all again. And I just went, oh. And one, I was just like, that's so unsustainable. But also I felt like, Jesus, like women can't do that.
Totally.
And women with kids can't do that. I was like, that's great that he can do that. But I don't know anyone who wants to do that or who could sustain that forever. And so I literally like threw the book across the room. Sorry, Tim. I love the rest of the book. And I just went, first of all, because I was like, why isn't there a lot of women in this book? And then I saw Tim answer that. And he was like, I'm a man. Like, that's my kind of style. And so I'm writing from what I know and what my friends know too. And I just thought, okay, I have to write my version of this book. We can't expect other people to do that without our lived experience, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I've always been that person, I think, who's tried to find the shortcut or try and find the hack. And some of that is undiagnosed ADHD, always having to try and find workarounds with things. And so actually the book is really interesting. I wrote Chillpreneur first, and then my publisher came to me and said, can you do an update post-pandemic? Because I wrote the first version kind of 2018, and it came out 2019. And so pre-pandemic, right? And we all changed. Mm-hmm. So the next version came out in 2022, I think, and it was renamed Chill and Prosper. And it was just like, okay, this is just all of my hacks. So actually that was corresponding to with diagnosis for me. So I wrote the first version pre-ADHD diagnosis, and I didn't realize how many things in there were totally related to my ADHD, which is really interesting. So then I could mention it. Yeah. In the next version, I could mention the pandemic. And also because so many people, I think when they first read the book, it would be like, oh, it's okay for your business to be easier, but not mine because I have to see people face to face or I have to do my business in a certain way. And the pandemic really showed a lot of people and a lot of businesses that we could be way more creative than we thought. So that's why the second version came out.
Oh, I love that. I didn't realize that there was a new iteration of it. So that's really cool. I'll have to check out the new one. You started sharing about that. What was the response? So some people were like, oh, it could be easy for you, but not me. But I think to your point, COVID showed us that there was a different way of doing things. And so when you came out with that second iteration, were more people like, hey, you're kind of onto something here and I want to learn more about it?
Yes, but I feel like a lot of people, it's not like I got criticism, but it was just like, but I can't do that, Denise. And we also put a lot more case studies in the second version from a lot of different industries. And I think it's fine for people to be skeptical about that because I do see it a lot in women. Sometimes we do find the harder path because we're trying to, for whatever reason, right? We're trying to be the good girl. Sometimes though, and I'm curious about your money archetype actually, because I feel like there's a bit of maverick in there. Sometimes we rebel against the easy. Sometimes I'm a ruler. We do overcomplicate and reinvent the wheel sometimes too. And so everyone's got a different reason. And this is why I love my work so much, because I just love hearing all of the nuances and all of the stories to try and nut out why are we sabotaging ourselves sometimes, or why are we making it harder than it needs to be? And it is allowed to be easier. And that's what I say in the book too. Like, it's not effortless as in effort none. It's just that we can effort a little bit less. And for some people, that means changing the way that they actually deliver to clients. You know, for some people, online does work better. Some people, face-to-face feels better. Sometimes it's the length of your delivery. And that can be totally depending on your personality too. Some people love working with clients for a long time. Some people like short, instant gratification things. And so you really can design every part of your business to really work for you. But it really starts with that permission piece of going, it's allowed to be easier for me. It's allowed to feel good. And I'm allowed to make money as well.
Oh, I love that. It's just the concept of designing a business that feels really good for you. I'm so passionate about that because that isn't a one-size-fits-all approach. It isn't like just because there's tons of successful people doing it this way doesn't mean that you have to do it that way. But I think, and this is a problem I found, is a lot of people don't know what they want. A lot of people don't know what they're chasing. And so they're just copying and pasting what other people are doing and then wonder why they feel burnout or wonder why it feels so hard. And I think even for me in the last 5 years, just a journey back to self and pulling out pieces of myself and like, hey, what is it that I really want that I'm trying to create? And when I did that and when I spent time on that, things happened quicker. I felt like I was in alignment, and that alignment just led to more abundance coming in.
Absolutely. But I think you're right though. A lot of people don't know what they want. I've seen this when I've spoken at conferences and I'll say to people, we're going to sit down and do some goal setting. And you'll see some people and they're sitting there and they're just like deer in the headlights because they can't write a single thing down. And I definitely have some clues to this, right? And so you can practice in small ways, asking yourself what you want. For example, if you are in a restaurant or a cafe, how many of us are still stuck in that mentality of like, what am I allowed to have? I know I was as a kid, it was like, I'm not allowed to have what I want. I have to get what I'm given, basically. Mm-hmm. And I practice that where I sit down at a restaurant, I think, what do I feel like? And it's really hard sometimes to do that. Also, go shopping and allow yourself to look at things and feel things before you look at the price tag. And I'm not saying buy things sight unseen. It's just that sometimes we're so used to going automatically to the sales rack or automatically looking at the price to even see if we like it. And there are little things that we can do to be more conscious about our desires. I think the other thing that's super important for women is our desires do change over time. Mm-hmm. And honoring that can be confronting as well, right? That my needs and my desires are important. And I can see that very clearly in my own life. Definitely my 30s, where I was steaming ahead in business and just creating and empire building, really. And now that I'm in my mid 40s, those desires have changed as well. But it took me a little while to realize that because I was just in the habit of moving forward.
Yeah.
If doing, absolutely. And sometimes you can be racing and then just go, what am I doing this for? And I remember when I first started to change a few of those things, I was worried about disappointing other people because I talk about my dreams very publicly. I share examples of buying dream houses and things like that. And then to say, I actually don't want that anymore, felt like I disappointed people. And I remember someone saying, where's that ambitious Denise gone? And it was really triggering because I thought, now I have to do it for other people. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this in so many entrepreneurs, especially now where definitely there's a downturn in the economy and some people feel guilty about even shifting their businesses again, you know, not realizing we had to do it a couple of years ago and change is a constant, but we always feel bad if other people are involved. We feel bad about changing our offerings, changing our pricing, changing our terms and conditions in our business, you know, how we can show up for people. We feel like we have to do it for everyone else, not for our own preferences. And we do have to build that in alignment with not only the practical realities, some people have kids, some people have caring responsibilities for our own bodies and our own cycles as well. And just for our own desires. So you said, and I'd love to pick this up where you said, like remembering who you are and bringing those. A big joy for me has been rediscovering my love of ballet. And so I started it 2 years ago and now I do like 9 hours a week of ballet. And I'm like, that's all I want to do.
That's so amazing. You're like, I don't want to work. I just do ballet.
Yes, pretty much. And that's really helped me, I think, with shifting and changing my business because it's not just an empty void.
Totally. Because we'll get bored. We'll get bored. Exactly. Like if we didn't have something else, you know, it's so funny you say that because I was just speaking with my husband and I love to read. I love to read books. And when you're in a push season of your business, you're like, we don't got time to read. Okay. We have to work. And so I really have challenged myself like the last 6 to 9 months just to read more. And I find myself wanting to read instead of work. And that is like so different than the story that I've had for the last 5 years. And it's just been really fun because also my income hasn't been affected. You know, it's like, hey, I bet for most of us, we could give ourselves permission to just have more fun and do more things that we want to do. And actually our income would grow as a byproduct. Instead though, we're so programmed to needing to do the things that get us the results we think we want. And I just love that. Like, hey, I want to do ballet 9 hours a week. Like I want to sit and read for 3 hours and not be bothered.
You know what? I bet you were like that as a kid.
Totally. Totally. You could find like in a quarter reading a Harry Potter book.
Yep. That was exactly me as well. And I think this is the joy of having your own business, right? Is that you do become more of who you really are. Mm-hmm. And rediscovering passions is such a big part of that. Giving yourself permission to do it as well is a huge part of that. And you earn that, I guess, by really being clear on how do I want to show up in the world, charging win-win prices. Like, let's face it, money is a part of that. But giving yourself permission to do it is such a big, big thing.
Oh, so good. I feel like I could talk to you all day. We could just keep going.
I'm good. I've got 20 minutes before my next podcast. Once I'm in the vortex,
You're in. Where can our listeners connect with you? Are you most active on Instagram? Are you on TikTok? Where are you hanging out?
Instagram. So Denise DT is where I hang out there. I would say I'm on all the platforms, really. TikTok, not so much. But yeah, Twitter, Facebook. My website's denisedt.com. I'm so easy to find. And I just really love hearing people's money stories. I feel like some people get embarrassed about sharing that stuff. And I think this is just the gold that we can do is to share our stories so we don't feel alone, but also so we can normalize talking about money. And before we go, I would love to hear the story behind the name of your podcast, because did that trigger people? This is what I think when we start talking about money, the people who get it. And then some people, it's really hard for them to talk about it.
Yeah, so good. So I always resonated with the word wealth. Probably because I didn't have any of it. And I was like, I'm manifesting that. I'm calling that in, you know? And when I became a mom, I just kind of felt like I stepped into this new identity that was like my wealthy mama identity. And when I decided I wanted to start a podcast, I really wanted to change the conversation about what wealth was. And it's not just money in your bank account. It's a business that lights you up. It's the ability to spend as much time as you want with your family. It's the ability to give beyond what you even think is comprehensible to others around you, you know? And so I do think it triggered some people. I actually still, if I had to guess, probably people haven't clicked on it because it's too in your face. You know, it's like, hey, this is the Wealthy Practitioner. Like, we are here to build wealth and create a legacy. And for me though, it felt so freeing to actually own that part of myself, because for a long time, I wanted to hide the fact that I liked nice things. I bought my dream car and then didn't drive it. You know, like, there was all my own money mindset stuff that I had to overcome. And so when I decided I was going to launch the podcast and call it The Wealthy Practitioner, it was a part of like owning that part of me. Like, it's okay that I want to be wealthy. It's okay that I like this conversation because I know the breakthroughs that come from this conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to facilitate those. So yeah, it's been really fun. And now it's cool because people start to identify as a wealthy practitioner. Like, I want to be a wealthy practitioner. And it's really cool to just see the movement behind that.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know what? The fact that you did that, it changes people's lives, right? And this is why I feel like we're so lucky to live in this time, because we can learn from each other so easily from all around the world. But I just really applaud you, Stephanie, for going for that. I know when I, it was years ago now, I saw Susie Orman speak at a conference, at a Hay House conference. And she opened her speech with, "I stand before you, a very, very wealthy woman."
Oh,
and it changed my life hearing that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know, right? And I think that was probably the moment where I was like, oh, this is where money is, what I want to talk about. And the fact that she could own it and claim it is so powerful. And actually, there's been an article written about her. She lives on an island now. She just fishes all day and then occasionally goes and does a keynote. And she's just living this beautiful, wealthy life. But it's okay for our goals and dreams to shift and change. And that is the privilege of the world we live in now, where we can pick up work if we need to. We can put it down if we need to, and like really build that true wealth. It's beautiful. So thank you, Stephanie, for the work that you do and for inviting me to talk to your beautiful community too.
Oh, yes. It's been such a joy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey there. Do you struggle with using multiple softwares to run your office? Well, I have the perfect solution for you. Genesis Chiropractic Software by Clinic Mind. This all-in-one system and billing service is cloud-based and designed by chiropractors for chiropractors. Its automated workflows streamline every aspect of your practice, from efficient billing processes that increase your collections to easy-to-use dashboards and retention tools that will keep your patients compliant with your care recommendations. We all know it's not just about getting more new patients, but also keeping the ones you do have happy. If you're interested in improving your office with a proven platform that works and want things to stop falling through the cracks, check them out at genesischiropracticsoftware.com. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Wealthy Practitioner Podcast. If you liked what I shared with you today, please rate the show and share it with your friends on social media. To connect with other practitioners just like you, join our exclusive Facebook group, The Wealthy Wellness Practitioner, where we continue the conversation about building profitable businesses. See you next week.